Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav, back after another Sunderland defeat. Unfortunately, we lost away at Stoke City. Alex Neil's Stoke City, and joining me to talk all about it is Chris, who doesn't look like he's in the best of moods to talk about this game. I sound very excited. I'm not really. I've had a couple of pints, which is why I may be up a height a little bit, but I'm not really in the mood to talk about this game, Chris, and I don't think you are either.
I'm not. I've been dreading it. And I think I should have had a couple of pints before I start talking about this one.
I think it was good. It was good to get a couple of pints down as to talk about this game. It's not a good game to talk about. Like I said to you before we came on air, I've been talking to a number of Sunderland fans today about the game, and they're all of the same opinion, really, that it was probably the worst performance of the season from us. It was just really disappointing. And I don't know how much of that is because of Alex Neil and the fact that people really just want to get one over on him, particularly since we got battered by them at the stadium. I don't know. But if you're just judging this as a performance on its own, it was poor. There's no getting away from it, really, is there? I mean, we'll get into the ins and outs of the performance, but it was very poor from Sunderland. I mean, I know Tony Mowbray was keen to point out that the weather might have played a part in the fact we couldn't train properly and all the rest of it. But yeah, it wasn't great, was it?
I couldn't get over that. I couldn't get to saying, you know, like, you know, how much the train. And he says, oh, that the players came back from international duty not knowing what they're supposed to do in their roles. And I thought, hang on a minute, you know, like, what if they miss 2 days? They haven't got a clue what they're supposed to do in a Sunderland trip. And I just, he was clutching at straws. He looked frustrated as anybody. And he was talking about the intensity and all this sort of stuff, which was exactly right. There was none. That was the thing that was lacking. It was at times in the game you thought that the referee blew the whistle because everyone just stopped, or everyone was walking with the ball because it was so slow. The tempo was slow. And the most frustrating thing as well, and look, I'm going to have to stop myself going off on kind of 10-minute long rants, but the most frustrating thing was that Stoke were absolutely crap and they were there for the taking. And I would say, you know, sometimes at this point you might say we made them look good, but we didn't. Like, even how bad we were, they were just as bad, but that's their natural, I think that's just how Stoke are. But we played well below par. And I mean, I mean, it's probably a good starting point, Gav, the team selection, because I think it all stemmed from there.
Yes. Well, yeah, that was a big talking point before the game. I'll be honest, when I seen the team, I thought, balls on this guy, picking a team like that, friggin' hell, you know? I thought, that's a pretty plucky team he's picked there. I mean, the big thing that stood out was the fact that we went with no striker. And I know that Mason Burstow's been disappointing. He has. He's not been great since he came in. And I think the excuse he gave before the game, Mowbray, was that Burstow was one of a few players who'd been on international duty and hadn't worked with the squad. But still, there was nothing up front. Like, that was the big theme of the game. It was just, we were great at the back, knocking it around. We were great in midfield, knocking it around. We were great when we moved it wide. And then as soon as you were looking to get it to somebody at the top end of the pitch, it was non-existent. And after a couple of occasions, you can kind of excuse it and say, well, you know, give it 10, 15 minutes, you might start building the ball up properly and getting at them and all the rest of it. But we didn't. And I thought at half-time it was clear we needed a striker on the pitch, just somebody to hit. Like, when we didn't want to do the short ball and we didn't want to go you know, try and play our way up the pitch and all the rest of it. We needed somebody to hit. We didn't have it. I thought, right, okay, get someone on up there who can hold the ball up. And he didn't do it. He left it far too late to change it, in my opinion. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, importantly, the team selection from the start of the game, if you look at the side, we had Hume at left back. Fair enough. We don't have Elise. We don't have Cirque. And, you know, if him or Huggins had played there, I wouldn't have complained. You know, they're interchangeable, really. 09 and Ballard at the back, that's standard. Pierre Edouard coming in. I think he's probably been rushed in, if I'm honest. I think Dan Neal being missing has exacerbated that. The fact that we had to bring in Pierre Edouard, and I thought he looked okay, but the problem was that he's been missing for 3 or 4 weeks, and ideally you would, particularly with the kind of injury he's had, you would have maybe got him a 21s game in or, a, you know, 30 minutes off the bench towards the end of a game. And circumstance dictated he had to start the game alongside Joe Bellingham, who we all know is better going forward than he is perhaps playing in front of the back four, trying to kick things off. Clark on the left, standard, he was always going to play. Bar playing out on the right, interesting, because Patrick Roberts started as well. So Patrick Roberts kind of played more like a centre-forward in this. That was what was weird to me, and I'm going to come to you on this, because we had Roberts and Pritchard basically playing as a front two. I don't know, but yes, at times when we were deeper, they kind of dropped into the midfield and linked up and all the rest of it, but it was like we were playing 4-4-2 at times with two attacking midfield players who are both 5'6", 5'7", up there, and in many, many occasions trying to win long balls. And I don't get it, if I'm honest. I don't get it, you know. I don't get it at all.
I'll be honest, when I saw the team sheet, my heart sank, because you're going away to Stoke City, and you can say whatever you like about Stoke City, but and Alex Neil, you know, as much as we didn't like him for what happened and all this sort of stuff, he comes up with a game plan and his team's battle and fight. And you play a team like that and you don't have something to try and get the ball to stick, and you're going to be in trouble. And I just didn't get it. It just didn't make sense. I mean, let's work from midfield and go to that kind of front line. But Ekwa, put it this way, Ekwa wouldn't have been in the team if Dan Neil hadn't have been sent off against Middlesbrough. Even at this stage, he would have been on the bench, and you know, it would have been Dan Neil alongside Job. Ekwa was rushed back, which again highlighted, you know, when we talked about in the transfer window about the central midfield area. It's obvious now, you know, we had one suspension, Ekwa took a knock, and now we're kind of throwing young lads in when they shouldn't be thrown in, when the 70-80% fit, whatever he was, clearly wasn't fully fit. Trying to kind of nurse him through the game, which is ridiculous. We don't want to be doing that with young lads. And all it took was a knock to Ekwa and a red card, and that's it. We look short in the middle. And that front line, I just didn't get it. I mean, for a start, Pritchard being pushed so far up the pitch, it meant that Job was then trying to kind of plug that gap. So then you had almost like a line of players. You almost had Ekwa sitting in front of the back four. Then you had Job. Then you had kind of Pritchard and Roberts who were taking up weird positions. But then the daft thing was you were then playing the ball long to them. So we weren't even getting our passing game going and coming short and kind of offering, you know, all these players, you think Pritchard, Clark, you know, whatever, Roberts, Barr, coming short for the ball. But we were trying to get up the pitch too quickly. We were playing 30, 40 yard long balls to Pritchard and Roberts. And it was just madness. And this was, you know, considering how early the goal was, it was obvious even before Stoke took the lead. And the other thing I didn't understand is if you're going to have Roberts and Barr in there, and again, Barr's already shown this season, and I think he showed last season as well, he's not a lone striker. He's a winger, he's a tricky player. He is not a lone striker. You know, he puts Roberts in that position and he's just as lost in that position. And that run, if you go back to the Borough game, that run that Roberts did from the byline into the middle and then weaved his way in and what he does out wide. Roberts is a wide player. He needs the he needs to start at the touchline and he does his thing from there. He can't play in the middle. He can't, you know, these players can't hold the ball up. You're trying to play balls into their feet. They've got giants behind them, kicking them up a height. None of it made sense. I mean, even before, I thought we looked lost even before kind of Stoke took the lead, and that was ridiculously early, but I just didn't get it. And it is slightly worrying. And I said this after the Borough game that I'm a big fan of Tony Mowbray. I really like him. I don't want him to go anywhere. I think he's done good things for Sunderland. I think he will do good things for Sunderland moving forward. But in the last two games, I think he's got it horribly wrong. I thought he got it horribly wrong in the second half against Borough and didn't give the side much of a chance. And then at Stoke, I honestly thought the players came out and they looked like they had no confidence in what they were being asked to do. They looked lost. Robertson Pritchard did not look like they knew, right, this is the game plan, this is what I've got to do. They seemed to be just wandering and didn't have a clue what they were meant to be doing.
I felt that about Jack Clark. I don't know if you did too, but...
I think he was just frustrated.
Yeah, very frustrated and was trying too hard. It was like... I think often under Mowbray, I feel like... And this is a positive. I feel like when he puts a team out, they do know what they're doing. I feel like everybody knows their job. I feel like when subs come on, they know their job. But in this game, they definitely didn't. And I felt like Jack Clark was a big... I thought he really suffered as a result. He was trying too hard. And you discount that goal that he scored. Nothing came off for Clark. And it's almost like if Sunderland as a team play poorly and he plays poorly... You know from sort of 5 minutes into the game what's going to happen, don't you? It's like you need to see him with players around him who know their jobs so he can just do what he's good at.
Well, what you've just said there, players around him, half his problem was with because of the system we were playing, when Clark was picking up the ball, there was nobody within 25 yards of him. Like, it was just bizarre. Yeah. Like, he was basically asked to say, right, you take the ball. And Pritchard and Roberts were, taking up bizarre positions. Nobody was really offering themselves. And then Clark decided he had to do it on his own. And then basically he had no confidence in what he was doing because he was basically being forced into trying to go on a mazy run and take a couple of players on. And like I said, just none of the players looked like they had any confidence in what they were supposed to be doing or what they'd been asked to do. And if you're going to play a system like that, if you're going to play four in a front line who were all tricky, small, technical players, like they need to get close to each other and play off each other. Like you look last season, the brilliance of Roberts and Ahmad was because half the time they were standing no further than 10 yards away from each other. Now, if you've got the likes of Barr, Pritchard, Roberts, Clark, like they need to play in triangles and get close to each other. They never seemed to kind of come short. Everything seemed to be going long, which made absolutely no sense.
Correct. Anyways, 7 minutes into the game and... You know how bad I am with names. Ryan Mimi? I don't know how you say it. M-M-A-E-E. That's how you spell his name. Yeah, I'm always going to butcher that. That goal, let's talk about it. Handball, in your opinion?
Well, it's no doubt, is it? I mean, the biggest sign of it being handball, which I don't even know how the referee made... If you look at the referee's position, he's standing about 10 yards behind him, but he's kind of standing directly behind him. So you can slightly understand if the referee's missed it. You can kind of understand. But the one that gets me is the assistant who's standing directly opposite. How has he not spotted that when he's looking directly at the ball? And the biggest telltale sign of that it's bounced off his hand, like if it had bounced off his bicep, which is the only, you know, the only thing you can think of as why they didn't give him ball, the ball goes down. But the ball pops up off his arm. So, yeah. like the direction of the ball tells you what it's hit off. Like, it's clipped off his arm and gone up. It wouldn't have hit off his bicep and gone up in the air. And but the thing is about, like, right, it's handball. I think we can just park that because it's handball. Referee got it completely wrong. But the goal came from how we set up. Because if you watch, it's a long ball forward to Patrick Roberts in the air. And you watch, there was a replay from, there was a camera angle that looked onto to our goal. And it showed the long ball forward to Roberts. And the defender, like, clearly won it. I mean, Roberts didn't even kind of challenge for it because he was like, what's the point?
Just point out at this stage, by the way, I saw a stat on Twitter last week. Patrick Roberts has won 6 headers in his career. Yeah,
exactly. So this ball, this ball was played 30 yards up to Patrick Roberts at head height. This defender won it, and you watch Patrick Roberts' reaction. His hands go up in the air as if, like, what am I supposed to do with that? Then the defender wins it. Then they get the ball, and then it gets popped into the middle. But it all came from us playing a long ball up to Patrick Roberts. The other thing is about, if you go, right, okay, yes, it's handball. But when they played the ball forward, Ballard went to challenge in the air, but he basically left his man to challenge in the air, and Luke O'Neill standing behind Ballard. So there was a free man, the guy who ended up actually scoring. So basically, we had kind of O'Neill was covering Ballard with a challenge in the air rather than marking his man. It was just bizarre. The defending was just all over the shop. Like, you know, with two centre halves, if one goes, like, and there's two strikers, the other one's got to mark the other man or sweep in enough behind where you're covering enough where you can cover any eventuality. But it didn't work that way. And so O'Neill was completely, he was just kind of completely out the game when the ball went, he handballed it to get in front of him. But the other, Huggins as well, Huggins didn't tuck in enough. And that the guy who scored, I'm not going to butcher his name like you, I'll leave you to the names. But he was left completely alone because O'Neill was out of position, Huggins was out of position. And I mean, look, it was handball, shouldn't have been given. But at the same time, we didn't help ourselves either. We didn't defend it at all.
No, I can't disagree with any of that. And I think I kind of try and compartmentalise the two parts of the performance. You've kind of got, right, we were shit. There's no getting away from that.
Nope.
Every Sunderland fan watching that game knows we were terrible. But that's a big decision early in the game, which if the officials get the job right, it could be a different game. And I know it's all coulda, woulda, shoulda in hindsight, but it's like, it's yet again, I'm sitting here and I'm going, well, if the linesman does his job and that gets disallowed, it's 0-0, and then it's a different game. After 7 minutes, we're 1-0 down to a goal that shouldn't have stood. And like I say, I've talked to a lot of Sunderland fans this weekend who watched the game, and they're all really disappointed with how we played. But I can't help but sit here and be like, but that goal shouldn't have stood. And I know I'm not getting away from the fact that we should have done better. We should have been better. That goal shouldn't have happened. We made mistakes in the build-up to the goal. It was poor in the second half. We just weren't enough of a threat. But yet again, I'm sat here talking about an official that's made a incorrect decision that's gone against us. And I'm beyond frustrated with all of this. I know what people are going to say, listen to this. I know people are going to be like, yes, but you kind of deal with the hand that you've been given and all the rest of it. 7 minutes into the game, somebody handballs it and scores. It just pisses us off so much. And I know we were shit, and I'm not getting away from that. Let's just say that was a perfectly legitimate goal. It bounces off his thigh, it drops to his foot, and he scores. Then we're talking about all these other things. You know, we're talking about how it was a poor ball forward from Patterson, 0-9 wasn't good enough, all these other things. Perfectly legitimate. And even in critique of the goal which stood, you can sit here and say, we should have been better. I get it, but I'm still sat here and I'm like, fuck's sake, another bad decision has gone against us. And I don't know what else to say now. It's like, it feels like it's every week.
You're right, because with the way Sunderland are, especially, you know, you look this season, that when we take the lead, like, that's it. It's almost game over. You know, when we keep the ball and we get our tails up. You wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we started off slowly, we nicked a goal and then went on to win 3-0. Look at Blackburn. We weren't great at Blackburn, but because we got
QPR. QPR was another one. Yeah.
Exactly. But when we get our noses in front, the tails go up. We've got cracking players who keep the ball. And even when we're not playing well, we can end up winning comfortably because we get that confidence. And when you get in front, you know, you can keep the ball and there's no pressure in really kind of trying to get forward quickly or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, look, you're absolutely right that who knows? You know, we'll never know now. But, you know, you're right. A referee's decision almost kind of ruled that out. But, yeah, you know, we have to come back to the fact that, we didn't help ourselves, not just in the goal, but we really didn't kind of, even before then, we didn't kind of give ourselves a chance. And like I said, the goal came from the way we were playing and the way we set up.
Yeah, but we reacted well. Jack Clark gets a goal 2-3 minutes later. Really good play by Bellingham, I thought. There was a point where you're thinking, like, cross it, and then he doesn't do it, and then he shifts onto his other foot, does like this little shimmy, and then gets a shot away. And it's all because of him. And I've been talking to a couple of Newcastle fans tonight in the pub, and they were asking about him. And I said, like, I can't help but compare him to his brother because he moves in the same way. He does the same things. He looks the same. I've watched a lot of Jude Bellingham this season for Real Madrid. and there are similar traits in his game, and that goal was like another hint. If there are genuinely scouts of all the top clubs sitting watching Sutton at the minute and watching him, 18-year-old, and he's got the ability to do what he does and just shift the ball onto his wrong foot and then back onto his right foot, and then all the things that he does. I'm telling everybody what they already know here, but fantastic. Just, you know, if you can get a level of, over the next sort of 18 months, if you can get a level of consistency out of him where he's doing that every game, but also dominating the midfield, and I actually thought he had a decent game. I know generally as a team we weren't great, but I thought he played pretty well, actually, Bellingham. I thought more often than not when he received the ball, he was careful with it, and he tired towards the end. I think once he was dropped into defensive midfield, when Zekwa come off, that kind of like, that restricted how effective he could be. But in this occasion, on this goal, where Clark was just in the right place and in the right time, it was all because of Job, and you can see why people are raving about him, because I thought he was great.
Yeah, no, he was, and it was a good game for him in terms of kind of his learning process, because Stoke really targeted him and tried to, you know, that left one on him every single time. You know, they were really going in hard on him. It was a physical game for him, but the goal, it really kind of told you a lot about the role he was playing. Because they tried to play out from the back, and you look at the position he was taking up, he was pushed right up, he was pressing them, and he saw the pass even before their player had even played it. He was kind of onto it. He knew where it was going to go, picked it off. You know, as I said, they were trying to play out from the back, which I don't think that Stoke City team should ever do. It's good enough. But yeah, he read it, he was there. But the best thing about it is that, you know, you get yourself into a position like that, you've won the ball high up the pitch, and you know the main thing when you're in that position is to have some sort of end product. You know, whether it's a shot on target, or whether it's a cross and you pick a player out, or whether you keep possession, whatever it is, as long as you've got an end product and you don't just kind of waste that opportunity. And like you said, turn kind of a couple of players inside out and got a shot off. And that's all you ask, you know, that you get into that position. You've done the hard bit, you've won the ball back, and then you do something with it. And he did, and that gave Clark kind of an easy finish. But like I said, it said a lot about the role he's got in the team, where he's expected, if they're playing in a two, or if he's playing with Dan Neil, or you know, that he's expected to sit way ahead of him. So he's kind of really on the front foot. He's pressing the opposition. A good performance, but I bet he'll have some bumps and bruises after that, because like I said, Stoke really went for him.
Yeah, that was about as good as it got. First half was poor. I thought it was just a poor game of football. Two teams who weren't really at it. I think whenever we got forward at Stoke, though, they were very well organised. And that's what I was expecting. If you listen to Tony Mowbray in the pre-match press conference, he was saying, you know, I've played against Alex Neil's sides right down the years. They're always well organised. They're well drilled. That was really it. That's pretty much all they had. They took a couple of chances they had, and they were well drilled. And I thought that they were pretty effective in nullifying Clark's threat. I know he scored, but every time he got the ball on the left-hand side, there were three players around him. And it was a pretty dull first half. But what Stoke did very well was managing the game and slowing us down and giving away niggly little fouls, which the ref was never going to boot them for. Yeah. That was the main thrust of the game, really. I mean, it ramped up significantly in the second half. I'm looking here now, they had five players booked in the game. And arguably it should have been more, but that's kind of the way they refereed the game to a certain extent, and they got on the ref's case when they wanted them to give a decision their way, and it worked. And I just think that it was a typical performance against Sunderland, where a team just knows how to shitbag their way through it. And fair play to Stoke, it worked. But, you know, first half in particular, we were very ineffective. And I think that was in large part down to the fact that they set up to just bore us and make it difficult for us.
Well, the only other chance or half chance they had other than the goal was that off the corner where, well, not cleared off the line, but, you know, it looked like it was heading for the far corner. And yeah, we kind of got a clear, but that was it. That was literally all they had in that first half. Whereas 5 minutes before half time, and this is the one that kind of stung a bit, because it would have kind of changed the game a bit, where Barr had that chance. And I know he was kind of a little bit under pressure, but I'm still not quite sure. Like, he went with the wrong foot. It's happened before, where, you know, but I think it might have been at Coventry, where Barr had that chance to play the ball across, And he had this chance. He had this chance again. But whenever he's in those positions, you're never confident. You're never confident that he's going to produce and end up kind of scoring or finish it off. And he went with the wrong foot, and it all went wrong, and it went into the side net. And you know, that would have set us up nicely going into half time. Because like I said, I mean, look, we were crap, and Stoke were just as bad. I mean, what a horrible team. No way can Alex Neil be proud of that team. They're just awful. They're just kind of niggly fouls and all that sort of stuff. But the other thing as well in that first half as well, we seem to keep switching it up. Like Barkep went out to the, he was out, he switched sides at one point. Then Clark went central. Then Roberts went out wide. And I couldn't decide whether they'd been told to do it or whether it was just this fluid system where they just made it up as they went along. Because like I said, it was just another sign that I wasn't quite sure whether either Mowbray knew what he wanted them to do or whether the players knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that pretty much summed up the rest of the game. To be honest, it was it wasn't great. And they get that goal pretty early in the second half. And Mowbray was at pains to point that out in his post-match. He said, you know, we at the start of both halves, we just weren't good enough. I don't get it. This we are poor from set pieces. We've improved the overall height of the squad, but yet still, we don't look organised. Like it felt as though we were marking areas, we were zonally marking, rather than we were marking people. And that was what undone us on this goal, because we had lads in the areas of the box ready to head the ball, but they weren't in the position where we needed them to be, which was where they scored from. It was bizarre, really. I don't know. It was just crap. It was crap all around. And we were like, yet again, coming out in the second half, really, really slack. I don't know. Yep. I don't know what the overall sort of feel was in the dressing room with the players. We'll never know. But we came out just looking not really ready. I don't know. We were kind of too relaxed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just on the corner. I mean, you're right. You know, I can't remember. I'm sure there was a mistake leading up to the corner. How they won the corner, can't quite remember. But the actual corner itself. You're right, because we've talked about this, us doing kind of zonal marking. But it was interesting hearing Mowbray say afterwards that he looked really miffed off by it, actually. He said that it was meant to be Ekwa's man. And he said Ekwa lost his man for it.
Called him out,
We've talked about the zonal marking, but it seemed weird that Mowbray specifically said, it was Ekwa's man. But the other thing, I mean,
I think the reason that he said that was because the interviewer specifically highlighted Ekwa and said he's been out a while, but he played well. And Mowbray was like, I think what he wanted to say was, no, he didn't play well at all.
Well, at one point he says, I have to give him a slap before games to kind of wake him up and all this sort of stuff. But the actual corner, the typical Alex Neil, I mean, they had worked on this because they knew what we're like. We've got a reputation now of set pieces. And they just piled everyone into that 6-yard box and put the ball right underneath the crossbar. But the other thing they did, if you watch the player ahead, just in front of the player who actually scored, his job was solely to stop Dan Ballard from jumping. And he had hold of Dan Ballard. He basically just held him down. And you could see Ballard running up to the referee afterwards, because that was one player was just taken out just to keep Ballard away from winning the ball. And yeah, it was just too easy. I mean, right in front of goal, you know, I can't even remember seeing Patterson, whether he was even challenging for it or able to challenge for it. They'd obviously worked on it, take Ballard out, put the ball underneath the crossbar, and just far too easy.
I don't really know what else there is to say about the rest of the game other than that it was crap. Don't think he got his subs right.
No.
Thought he waited too long to make really obvious changes. Ridiculous. Like, you know. We could tell we needed somebody up front, and it was like, I don't know what minute it was when we brought on the first centre forward, but it was too late anyways. I'm just looking now. Roosen came on 66, but he went right wing. Burstow also came on at the same time. He went up front along with Bradley Dack, who looks like he's put about a stone on while he's been injured. He looked like a Sunday league player.
It gave me hope. I've still got hope. I can maybe I'll turn out for Sunderland.
Nothing that he tried went right, put it that way. We weren't any more threatening. There was a point I think it might have been at the start of injury time at the end of the second half where I can't remember who it was. We had two players up front. I think it might have been Semedo and Dak and possibly Clark. I don't know. But there was a bunch of players up front, and Burstow was on sort of the edge of our box when he picks the ball up and plays a really like a 70-yard ball forward diagonally. And then that's the centre forward. He should be the one at the other end of the pitch trying to win the header, and he's playing the long ball forward. We were without ideas. I think that was the point. It doesn't matter who had played that pass. The fact that your centre forward's going deep to pick the ball up and play a long ball tells me that nobody really knew their job on the pitch, that we totally lost our shape, and that we were without hope. And a little bit like after the Borough game when me and you were talking about it, I just don't think Tony Mowbray got it right in terms of his decision making. And we, when he gets it right, we'll sit here and we'll tell him, you know, you've done that well, it was great, it was this, that and the other. And at the other end of the scale, if he gets it wrong, we've got to sit and point it out. And I think he got it badly, badly wrong. And I don't think the team selection at the start of the game was right. And then as it progressed, and I think every Sunderland fan watching that could see what we need to try and do. Get people up front, maybe go back to front a little bit quicker than we normally would. Try and get it to stick up there so that we could get back in the game. And it was really, it was too late for me. And even when he made the changes, it just didn't work. And I don't know about you, but the team selection at the start and then the subs during the game, it just tells me he doesn't trust the strikers he's got at the minute. I don't think he does. I think it was sort of an easy excuse in front of the press to say Burstow had been away on international duty. You know, we're not daft. He's not played well enough to really be in the team. But at the same time, nobody is convincing when they come on the pitch. And I don't think Mowbray's convinced with him here. I don't think he sees Roosen as a striker. We're still waiting for Mayenda to come in, who I think he actually probably likes. And yeah, I just think that the game management, the team selection, the substitutes, we let ourselves down ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, it tells you everything. You know, if you look at the list of players who were on the pitch for Sunderland in that game, you know, Roberts, Pritchard, Clark, Barr, Burstow came on, Hamia was on for just around 10 minutes, Roosen, Dak, Ashish came on with about 15 minutes to go. And the sum total of our chances, our attack and play in that second half was basically when we hit the post from that Bradley Dak free kick, Ballard header, hit off the post. And that was the sum total, you know, a free kick, you know, from out wide, and that was it. And it's ridiculous, really, because those players are much better than that. And you're right. I mean, I think, I don't want to put it like 100% on Mowbray. I do think he got it wrong. His team selection was wrong. I've already said that. As you've said, completely agree. Subs were completely wrong, didn't make sense, and too late. But the other thing was that the players themselves, they weren't great. I mean, even if the system was crap, we'll never know whether they were doing what they were told to do or what. But, you know, who knows? But the players were kind of off. They had an off day as well, you know, that none of them really came out of it with much kind of credit. Like I said, Job maybe. I thought the lads at the back were actually half decent, apart from kind of the mistakes of the first goal.
I saw Stoke fans praising Huggins. I saw a couple of them on Twitter thinking he played pretty well, and
right.
I think we're clutching, really. I think generally, and I think the consensus, like I say, I've spoken to a lot of people who watch the game, and they all pretty much said it was the worst they've seen us play this season. I would probably agree.
Frustrating, because you know we drop points against Cardiff, who didn't look great. Drop points against Stoke, who were absolutely crap, and it's just frustrating because, you know, the points were there for the taking if we turned up and did our thing.
We'll do some three-word reviews quickly. Glenn Sears, he says, missed Dan badly. Yes, Dan Neil, been our best player all season. You know, second half against Borough and then that full game there at Stoke. He was clearly missed, wasn't he? I mean, it's just, there's no getting away from it. And, you know, what could have been if the ref had got it right against Borough, you know, we could have been 3 or 4 points better off, but there we go. Chris Day says, doesn't trust strikers. I think I said that before about Mowbray. I think that's pretty clear. Paul Anderson says, new bogey team. Ethics, they've said no more excuses. Sun Until I Die have said, Alex Sodden-Neill. Michael Bowers, start defending better. Old Papa Mowbray says, tactically all wrong. Matt says, play a striker. Glenn says, fuck me, ref. Jesus of Nazareth says, we are cursed. Jordan says, Mowbray losing it. Well, come on, two bad results. Rachel Thexton says another apology incoming. Presumes she's talking about the PGMOL about that. Daniel Ray says Mowbray cost us. Liam says shite, shite, shite. Neil Chandler says we lack experience. Sean says why no strikers? A lot of comments about Mowbray here. A lot of people not really in.
I mean, these apologies from the PGMOL. I mean, what are you supposed to do with these? Like, frame them and stick them up in the academy, or use them for bog roll. I mean, what's the point? I mean, what they're just kind of, I don't know. Do we just collect them? Do we get an extra point if we get five apologies or something? I mean, it's just pointless.
There's tons about strikers here. Tons about Mowbray. Daniel Gallagher leads us into the next segment, I think. He says Leicester away next with a very nervous-looking face emoji. Let's talk about that quickly. We've got Leicester on Tuesday night, Chris. We have to. Leicester, who are absolutely romping it at the top of the league. Mm. They've lost one game in 12. They've scored 26 goals. They've only conceded 7. They've largely kept together the team which they were relegated with, which really is a decent Premier League team. You know, I'm just looking at the side that played against Swansea. They won Swansea 3-1 at the weekend, and they're starting 11. I'm looking right through it. They've got Pereira, who's their captain, is a Portuguese international. Fice at the back, who was playing the Prem last year. Vestergaard, who scored and played a number of years at the Prem. James Justin, who was one of the best players in the Championship, stepping up. Ndidi, who had been linked away with big money moves and didn't go. Harry Winks, who has played for England and is still a young man. Dewsbury Hall, who's probably one of the best players in the division. Jamie Vardy, who's scored for fun since he signed for Leicester all them years ago. Mavididi, who is a young English prospect. And then the bench, Connor Cody, Kelechi Iheanacho, Hamza Choudhury, Yunus Akun, Cesar Cassidy, Mark Albrighton, Harry Suter, Patson Daka. I mean, that is a good squad for the Championship. I think their manager's been rotating. I think he's just been swapping the team in and out with every game because he can, because he's got like top players in every position twice over. It's going to be tough, isn't it? Leicester away is possibly the most difficult game of the season. The only thing I keep thinking of is when we played Burnley away last year, and they hadn't not scored in a game at Turf Moor all season, and we went there and got a draw. And it was because we knew what the job was. And I suppose that's the thing with this game, is going into it, Mowbray is going to have to make sure that these players know, come on, lads, as good as we are, we've got to go there and we've got to really stay organised, because they've got quality in every position. And if we aren't switched on, we're going to really, really struggle, and it could be a long night. I mean, what's your hopes for this game? Is it just not get beat? Because I'd be over the moon with a point. Despite the last two results, I think anything sort of point or a win would be unbelievable in this situation, because Leicester are clearly going to win the league.
Yeah, well, regardless, I mean, even if we'd come out the last two games with 4 points, I'd have still been saying like a point would be good at Leicester. I wouldn't be, you know, doesn't necessarily change anything. I mean, it might be more impressive now that we've lost the last two, but I'd still be saying that. But I mean, you know, just to kind of cling on to some hope, I mean, they've only lost one this season at the first 12 games, and that was at home. So, I mean, that's something to kind of hold on to, I suppose. The other thing is, you know, that, you know, you look at we played a poor Stoke side and hardly threatened them. Leicester in 6 games at home have only conceded 3 goals. So they're conceding one every other game, which is a little bit ridiculous. and we need to be on it if we're going to score. I mean, I think you're right bringing up the Burnley game. I think Mowbray might have mentioned it as well. And you can imagine him going in with a similar game plan. And he hinted that the way Leicester play might suit us as well. So we might be looking for a little bit more to kind of try and catch them.
Yeah.
If we kind of get decent possession of the football. I think, you know, if we get one, it could be a decent night, but I'm clinging on to that kind of nil-nil type game plan that we came out with Burnley. I think that's going to be the way forward.
I'm just looking at the game they've lost this season was at home against Hull, and in that game, Leicester had 21 shots, only one on target, 65% of the possession, nearly twice as many passes as Hull had. Hull had 4 shots on target from 7. So I guess that was just an off night for Leicester. I mean, just looking at the team, the fielder that night, Casey McAteer, I think he's injured now. Kelechi Iheanacho played. Just looking around the team, Callum Doyle, I forgot about him. I don't know if he's going to be injured for the game. But they've got a quality side, Leicester, and I think we kind of have to try and forget about what they can do again. I always say this, like, it's always about what Sunderland do. That's what it was on Saturday. You know, we were poor, and Stoke managed to take advantage of the fact we were poor. Had we turned up and only played in second gear, we would have beat Stoke because they were shit. But in this game, you're looking at it and you're thinking, right, well, if we can go there and just understand that a point would be valuable, but at the same time, if we do sit a little bit deeper than we normally do, which we're probably going to be forced to because of just how decent Leicester are, that when we do break forward, we've got players who can do things with the ball. Like, I think Clark thrives in that situation, but I'm clutching, if I'm honest. I think this is going to be tough for us. And what I'm worried about is that we get beat, which I think most people in the bookies will think will happen. I think they're all going to expect Leicester to win this game. But I'm worried we get beaten and the reaction is just poor. That not just from the fans, but from the players. Kind of we get carried away because we've already lost two games before this one. And like the reaction is, well, we've gone to shit. This is wrong. That's wrong. This was always going to be a hard game. I'm keen not to just write us off, but at the same time, I think we're going to have to work very hard to win this.
Well, yeah, what slightly concerns us is that Tony Mowbray was talking about not having much time to work with the team on the training pitch. Well, there's like a 3-day turnaround now between Saturday, Tuesday. I mean, he's not going to, you know, he'd do well to come up with a brilliant game plan like with them on the training pitch, because you're not going to train them kind of, you're not going to go full hog because we're carrying injuries in the next 3 days on the training pitch. So all eyes are going to be on the team sheet and what he does, because
what do you think he does then? What do you think? Because obviously Dan Neil comes in, that's so obvious. But do you know what I've been thinking, Chris? And I don't know if the same with you, but when you look at our squad now, we've actually got a decent squad.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been much reason to change it this season, but we've lost two games. And, you know, this will be the second of three games in 7 days. Do you think this is totally not Mowbray's style, but has he got to change it in a number of positions to just try and get a reaction? Give lads a chance who've been waiting on the sidelines, or does he just do more of the same?
Well, yeah, because those lads now who came on against Stoke are going to be chomping at the bit to start the game. But I think a lot depends on the reaction Ekwes had to playing at Stoke. You know, because Mowbray said he had the ice on and all that sort of stuff. How much can he turn it around and play again against Leicester? Or does Ekwa need to sit out or sit on the bench? Can he not start? Do we keep Ekwa on the bench just in case Dan Neil breaks down, or to replace Job later on in case we want to defend a lead or whatever? You know, so it might depend on how fit Ekwa is, because I think that's a big question mark after the weekend. It's all in the front positions, because you've got to say, well, the back four we've got one of the best defensive records. Back four have been playing reasonably well, although, you know, a couple of mistakes against Stoke. But it's in those front positions. And you've now got those players like Roosen, like Burstow, Hamia, who I'm not sure will get a look in, or Sheesh. He's pushing. Although the weird thing was that Bradley Dack got on before Oshish, even though Oshish has been playing really well, which made no sense. Maybe it was all about set pieces and we nearly got one a minute after he came on. But that's the only reason I could think of that Dack came on before Oshish, because we've been saying for weeks now, oh, he looks good. He looks sharp when he comes on. He's kind of, he had an impact. And he waited almost 10 minutes after Dack came on, which made no sense either. It's all going to depend on what he's going with in those front positions, what shape he's going to go with. I mean, again, my heart will kind of sink if he goes in with the same 11. I mean, he cannot go in against Leicester with the same 11 and a similar game plan. He has to change something up in the final third.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because I think we're both pretty pessimistic about what could happen here. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough. Importantly, I think collectively, you know, we are still very early in the season, and I don't want to get carried away if we lose another game. I think that we've got wins in us and we will win games. We're gonna pick back up at some point. But it's just it's hard to feel optimistic when you've lost two games. I totally get it. And, you know, especially when you're facing the league leaders next up who don't look like losing a game anytime soon. So I get it, but I'm not going to get carried away either way. A win would be fantastic, but it's not going to be season defining. If we can somehow go there, I know you said Filbert Street, but if we can somehow go to whatever the name of the season stadium is, if we can go there and somehow win it, I'm not going to be totally carried away. I'll be chuffed with the win, but at the same time, we are, what? How many games into the season now? I don't even know, about 9, 10? 12. Pretty early into the season. Yeah, 12 games into the season. There's no point getting carried away either way because we're sixth in the table. I know it's very tight in there, but we're sixth. If we can get a point, that would put us on 20 points. That would mean we're still going to be in the top 10 probably, you know, coming out of this run of fixtures. And I'm happy with that, but it's just, I think it's very easy to get carried away and all the rest of it either way. You know, if we win, we could be as high as third. It's like, that's how great that. The championship last season was just like this. It was close. That you could go anywhere from sort of third down to 20th, and there was like 5 points in it up until the last sort of 5 or 6 weeks of the season. It's the same now, and it's probably going to be the same right through the season, and you've just got to, I think you kind of got to accept in many ways that other than Leicester and Ipswich are right up there, Leeds are creeping behind Ipswich. Other than a handful of teams, it's much of a muchness. People are going to lose. Teams are going to lose games against teams they shouldn't really lose against. We've done that this season already. This is one where we're probably expecting to lose, and I don't think my mindset will change a lot if we do lose. And this is the first time I felt like this is a season where I've gone into a game and I'm kind of expecting us to lose. You know, every other game we played this season, I felt really confident going into it. You laugh at me when I predict wins, but I can't with this one because they just, Leicester looks so good. So, like, it's not going to really change my mind on anything if we do get beat.
Yeah. Well, look, all I'm looking for, considering what we've seen in the last two games with the game plans and all this sort of stuff, all I'm looking for is for us to have had a solid game plan and for the players to go out and look like they know what they're doing and how they're set up. And so I'm looking for, you know, as long as we look like we're at a plan and we have a good go at it, if we get beat, we get beat. Leicester are kind of running away with it a little bit, and that's fair enough. But yeah, I mean, look, just in terms of that, you know, quarter of the way through the season, being sixth, if we were asked that at the start of the season, would you take that quarter of the way through the season? Absolutely, we would have kind of snapped your hand off to be sixth. And that is kind of about our level. You know, being sixth in the lead, you know, if you look at, we haven't got a recognised striker who's kind of able to bang them in, or, you know, we haven't yet kind of identified someone who can knock in 15, 20 goals this season. So we're short of that type of player. And without that, I don't think we're seriously going to threaten the top two this season. They might surprise us. They might go on a cracking run. But, you know, being top six, being around that kind of top 10, that is about, with the squad we've got, with the age they are, with players kind of getting used to each other. We haven't, like I said, we haven't got that recognised striker. So, look, it's kind of, we are where we're supposed to be. We're in a good position. Who knows, you know, we did all right in January in the window last season. So as long as we set ourselves up nicely, we'll be fine.
We will. Okay, we'll be back after Leicester, I'm sure, with another review slash preview. I thought we'd keep this short tonight, but we're 50-odd minutes in, and there we go. It's probably the most downbeat we've been on a pod this season, which I guess in many ways tells you sort of how the game went. And yeah, I'm sure we'll rebound. We've got a good team. It is just disappointing because not only, I mean, we've barely mentioned Alex Neil. It wasn't about him really, although I would have loved to have got one over on him. It was just Stoke. They're just a horrible team. I hate playing Stoke. I always have. All down the years, I've hated playing Stoke. I've got a mate whose dad's a Stoke fan. And under Roy Keane, he bet me that Stoke would beat us for a fiver. And I said, no, son, they'll win. And I still owe him that fiver. And he reminds us every time I see him. And I've managed to successfully avoid him since Saturday. And I'm hoping to do that for the near future. So, yeah, I'm not in a good mood. But let's see. We might beat Leicester. We might be all right. So cheers, Chris. Thanks as always, mate.
No worries.
And cheers to the listeners. don't forget, we've got a book out. It's now available. It should be on your doorstep if you pre-ordered it, and you should already have it, and it's fantastic. SCFC 365, you can buy it from the Love Supreme website. The link for that is on our Instagram bio. It's on our Twitter page. It's on the top of every article on the website. So if you haven't already got it, make sure you buy it. £10, all the profit goes to Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. If you don't want to buy it for yourself and you want to get it for someone for Christmas, I'm sure it'll be a fantastic little stocking filler for any Sunderland fan who loves reading about the club. So make sure you pick that up. And yes, we will be back after Leicester. We'll see you then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.